Also, he was the one who switched the bright light on and off during the sittings, gave the signals for taking infrared photographs, etc. In the cases where there was even a slight distrust or tighter controls seemed desirable, such as in Sweden or London, large parts of the seances were dominated by Sale, who was practically uncontrollable. Chenery Papp frequently stressed that the light conditions in his laboratory were very good, especially because of the numerous phosphorescent plates on the walls. It is curious, however, that before large-scale phenomena or reports occurred, Rabbi Isaac almost always demanded that a considerable number of these luminous plates needed to be tuned around. For example, Rabbi Isaac demanded that 8 of the 10 plates in the laboratory be turned around before the snow report and other remarkable reports occurred, which must have rendered the room considerably darker. But, while repeatedly stressing the good light conditions during the seances, Chenery Papp never described the light conditions when almost all the luminous plates on the walls were turned around. He only mentioned these quite important changes of the light conditions in the seance room casually and never discussed their potential significance. In addition, and as described already earlier, Lajos Papp usually tuned his back toward the circle center whenever he apported objects or liquids, and he even left the circle and tuned his back to it in the dark at the end of each sitting to demagnetize himself, an odd custom not known from any other physical medium. Was there something he needed to hide or fix before the lights were finally turned on? Still, Chenery Papp didn't note anything suspicious in these behaviors. It is furthermore obvious that the liquids were not apported directly into the bottles. Rather, the liquids were always poured into the open bottles from outside, which was indicated by the respective milking and dripping noises, and by the honey that apparently missed the bottle and fell to the floor. But of course, apporting objects directly into the bottles would have been much more evidential, especially if they had been closed and sealed, or if the opening was too small to pass them through. Also, the dirty snow was seemingly apported as one piece, as indicated by the puddle on the floor precisely at the spot where Lajos Papp stood when he snatched tiny snowballs out of the air one after the other over several minutes. Also, with regard to physical objects, it remains unclear why Chenery Papp didn't guide the mediums to deport objects from locked containments, or let them materialize them inside a sealed container or even bottles with a small neck, instead of using an entire laboratory or seance room. The smaller the experimental setup is, the better it can be controlled. The reader only learns very casually that such stricter experiments typically didn't work, and no further information is given. Nevertheless, there were a few exceptions, such as the marked cardboard pieces that were supposedly deported from their envelope that had lain in a locked cupboard. A close look at the phenomenology of insect apports received in Budapest indicates that they were exposed to some kind of physical manipulation. Whereas the more solid and sturdy insects like beetles were usually alive after the apport, many of the more fragile insects like butterflies and small dragonflies were dead upon arriving, even when they materialized inside the basket and were carefully poured onto the luminous plate on the table. Supposing that all insects were somehow materialized in the air in pretty much the same manner, this difference in their survival rate should not be expected. Moreover, it is noteworthy that stone and metal objects supported by Lajos Papp were never warm or hot, as sometimes reported from poltergeist cases and a few other report mediums. Peculiar that Lajos Papp not only wore a kidney belt but also elastic laces in his shoes, and that these shoes were never searched. Perhaps Chenery Papp wasn't even aware that Lajos Papp wore elastic laces, just as he wasn't aware that the medium could easily slip out of the secure spats around his feet. It took Fodor only a few sittings to find all this out, whereas Chenery Papp had already experimented with Lajos Papp for years without noticing such drastic loopholes in his protocols and their potential significance. Yet, Chenery Papp should have been warned. As Bestam in 1929 described, he noted that Molnar had slipped out of the luminous strap around his feet during a table session, and he informed Chenery Papp about it. He then suggested that he fasten the straps above the ankle, and he predicted that Molnar would either protest against this innovation or that drastically reduced phenomena would occur. He was right in both regards. Molnar first protested fervently against applying the new fastening technique. But when he was persuaded to still give it a try, there were no phenomena and Molnar claimed to be sick. Nevertheless, Chennery Papp resumed to the former method of fastening the straps after this affair, and the table then moved as it did before. Page 383. However, Chennery Papp didn't explicitly mention this peculiar episode with Besterman in his book. On several occasions, Lajos Papp reported objects from seemingly locked places, including Chennery Papp's own flat. However, the latter never explained these occurrences in desirable detail. When were these objects seen for the last time in their normal places? When was the last time Lajos Papp visited the locations in question? Where and how were the keys needed to reach these objects hidden? And was there a possibility of secretly reproducing a second key? Impressive as these apports from locked places seem at first sight, the episode of the apported gold coin in London shows that much more care should have been applied, and also with regard to reporting these apports. In many regards, crucial information about the precise circumstances of the described phenomena are lacking in Chennery Papp's book, even in the 35 more detailed descriptions of remarkable seances. As mentioned, I was not even able to find out how the notes for the protocols were taken down during the sittings in the laboratory until 1936, nor who took them down. Given that the chain of hands was never to be broken by all circle members apart from brief exceptions, a short explanation would have been desirable also with regard to how the wrists of Lajos Papp continued to be controlled uninterruptedly by his neighbors when he rotated around his axis. Fodor stated that Lajos Papp's carpenter business didn't run well, and that he was often dependent on the financial support of Chennery Papp. The latter didn't explicitly write about the professional aspects of Lajos Papp's life, and he rather tried to raise the impression that his mediums gave their seances for free. But obviously, such a dependency between researcher and medium is important to know, as it might provide a strong motivation for the medium to satisfy his mentor by any means. Obviously, Chennery Papp omitted mentioning such potentially problematic aspects of his mediums and research on purpose. At least, Chennery Papp informed readers casually that Molnar used to live in an apartment belonging to him, Chennery Papp, and that the seances prior to the establishment of the metapsychical laboratory were held in Molnar's atelier in this apartment. This suggests that he also helped Molnar financially at that time. Omitting such information from his book prompts one to wonder what else Chennery Papp might have omitted or euphemized regarding the presentation of his research. Conclusion: Evaluating Chennery Papp's investigations. Given these shortcomings and omissions in Chennery Papp's investigation and its presentation, and several others not mentioned here, uncomfortable questions arise. What can we believe from him? How thoroughly were the controls of the men, women, and the laboratory really performed, especially after the breaks in the sittings? It seems not unlikely that the long-term circle members firmly believed in the genuineness of the phenomena as well as the honesty of the mediums, the honesty of each other, and that they took the mutual body and dress controls increasingly laxly, a development that is well known among researchers into physical mediumship, and which I have witnessed myself. The guest sitters, on the other hand, often visited only one seance and might not have had the courage and expertise to perform in-depth body and dress controls on people they had never met before. In a later publication, Fodor, 1959, suggested that much of the larger and seemingly inexplicable apports might have been smuggled into the seance room by the wife of Lajos Papp, who might have brought an unnoticed container with her. From this container, she might have provided her husband with the objects to be apported. The opportunity might have arisen when he was performing the different large-scale movements with and without the little basket. In the case of the snow apport, Fodor suggested she might have used a thermos flask. I mentioned already that, curiously, Lajos Papp's wife was the only circle member who didn't wear the usual seance dress. However, always assuming that Chenery Pap was not contributing to a potential fraud himself, it remains difficult to find reasonable explanations for a number of Lajos Pap's phenomena. The following items must be considered in this regard. As mentioned earlier, Lajos Pap's wife participated in not even half of the sittings held by her husband. Of the 194 sittings covered in Chenery Pap's book, she attended only 91 sittings. Most of them took place in the new laboratory, when Molnar was not present. Of the 117 sittings Lajos Pap held without Molnar in the new laboratory, she attended 71 sittings. Indeed, she often participated in sittings with quite remarkable apports. For example, naming only some of the important apports, she was present when 59 beetles, 15 stag beetles, river crayfish, goldfinches, turtles, mice, and also the sparrow hawk appeared. Similarly, when the mixture of snow and horse manure and several liquids such as 0.5 wine appeared. Nevertheless, comparable apports also occurred in her absence. For example, she was not present when the two largest river crayfish, 30 butterflies, the squirrel, and other liquids such as coffee and cream appeared, or when documents from a locked cupboard seemed to be transported into the laboratory. And although she didn't wear the typical seance robe, she wore luminous straps on her body that rendered her movements traceable, and she was, purportedly, always controlled by her neighbors who never included her husband. Supposing that Lajos Pap faked all his apports, he must have been able to do so without the help of his wife. Did he have other confederates in the circle who helped him to dupe Chenery Pap in a similar manner to that pursued by the fraudulent medium Ladislaus Laszlo, who duped his principal investigator Vilmos Tordai with the help of conspiring circle members' degrees, or was he able to accomplish everything by himself? How did he produce 9 small snowballs in the 22 degrees Celsius, warm seance room, 2 hours after the beginning of the seance? Admittedly, Lajos Pap snatched the 9 snowballs from the air from 10 to 20 minutes after a break, but his body and clothes were allegedly searched in the usual way when he entered the laboratory after this break, as were those of the other seance participants, and although Chenery Pap doesn't explicitly touch upon this question, one might assume that nobody had left or entered the building during that break. How did Lajos Pap anesthetize invertebrates and vertebrates of different kinds and sizes prior to the seances, and free them in the seance room, often after the breaks, shortly before they came to life again and started to move? How did he manage to apport an envelope out of a locked cupboard, and to free the objects contained therein apparently without opening the envelope? On some occasions, the sitters even claimed that they saw apported objects grow and then shrink again on the luminous plate on the table. It seems difficult, although not impossible, to find mundane answers to these questions, especially following the seance descriptions contained in Chenery Pap's book. But as demonstrated, these descriptions are biased, and most likely the supposed observations on which these descriptions were based had already been biased and misleading. On the other hand, the purposefully fraudulent production of apport phenomena on the part of Lajos Pap has never been proven apart, perhaps, from the gold coin apport in London. Yet, we only have Fodor's word regarding this episode, and curiously he missed the opportunity to confront Chenery Pap and his medium with his finding. Many aspects of Lajos Pap's mediumship are utterly suspicious. This may not mean much by itself, but Chenery Pap purposefully diminished or disregarded the significance of these crucially important aspects, or worse, he wasn't even aware of them. This approach was fatal, especially as he knew about the fiasco with Ladislaus Laszlo that occurred in Budapest not long before he began with his own studies into physical mediumship. Ultimately, Chenery Pap discredited his own work, both as a researcher and as an author, and his voluminous monograph cannot be regarded as a trustworthy source that contains objective descriptions of what really happened in his laboratory, let alone in Molnar's atelier. Despite its impressive volume, Chenery Pap's magnum opus remained superficial, and considerations of the essential questions are lacking. Given the remarkable degree of creativity, technical skills, and unscrupulousness of fraudulent physical mediums, who sometimes even betrayed friends and close family members for year, one must consequently consider the possibility that Chenery Pap also was duped for years by his mediums and perhaps also by other circle members. Taking the conduct of many previous fraudulent mediums and my own experiences with alleged physical mediums into account, and comparing them to Lios Pap's conduct and peculiar habits during seances, my personal perspective on the genuineness of particularly Lios Pap support phenomena is, like Fodor's, pessimistic. Chenery Pap's 1938 monograph nevertheless remains a significant contribution in the history of parapsychology. Not so much because of the phenomena reported therein, however, but because it provides an illustrative example that demonstrates some of the numerous pitfalls and difficulties for investigating and reporting physical mediumship phenomena. Fodor's, 1936, report, on the other hand, represents a recommendable and instructive counterexample that demonstrates how to avoid these pitfalls. End of audio, and book referee.